The beginning of human pride is to forsake the Lord. The heart has withdrawn from its maker. These are the opening words from our Old Testament reading from the wisdom literature book known as Sirach or Ecclesiasticus, a book we rarely hear from in our weekly services. The beginning of human pride, the author claims, is to forsake the Lord. What does it look like when we forsake the Lord and enter into this sin of human pride? Our other readings from today help us flesh out what prideful living looks like and how we might do a better job of turning to the Lord instead of away from Him. Earlier this week, as I drove to a meeting in Birmingham, I listened to a sermon of a Scottish priest and author named John Philip Newell. And while the scripture text he used was not drawn from any of our readings today, the point he made was oddly fitting, strangely in sync. In his sermon, John Philip Newell argued against the value of the doctrine of original sin, the doctrine that came into being within the first few hundred years of the church and has been hotly debated since. This doctrine refers to humanity's being tainted by sin dating back to the fall of Adam and Eve. Through Adam and Eve, the doctrine says, and their sinfulness, all people from birth are sinful. Newell believes that this doctrine sets us apart from God and focuses rather on our innate godliness. He focuses on our being wonderfully created in the image of God, all of us. And if we shift our understanding of our place in creation and our place with each other and see each other as an image of God, not an image of sin, how might our treatment of each other change? Newell describes the moment that he first held his newborn granddaughter. He was full of wonder and awe, he said, holding this newly created being of God. He could see in her the image of God being reborn from a mother once again. Probably many of us have experienced the awe and amazement when first seeing a newborn infant. Birth in every way is a miracle. But Newell says something more as he gazed down at his granddaughter. He said he saw the eyes of God looking right back at him. What if every time we looked at each other, we could acknowledge that we are seeing the eyes of God looking right back at us? What if we saw in ourselves in the mirror and knew that we were looking at the image of God? Would we treat ourselves better? This shift in thinking does not deny that we fall into sin. There is not one of us who does not recognize our ability, even our seeming propensity to sin. We get that. We know that we are sinful creatures. We may even love to wallow in our sinfulness. What if instead we were to wallow in our godliness, our God-likeness? Do we ponder at all that we are made in the image of God? That we all have God DNA? You may be thinking, if you spent more time pondering your God-likeness, that you might be more likely to fall into the sin of human pride, which the writer of Sirach warned against. But I do not believe that is so. Because if you are remembered to your own God-likeness, you must also be remembered to the God-likeness of everyone. This is not just something that you and I have all to ourselves. There is not a living person, nor a person who has ever lived, nor a person who will ever live, that is not made in the image of God. And we need to spend more time pondering that, rather than pondering how we fall short. Everything in the world we live in is quick to tell us that we don't make the mark. When we come here When we come to this countercultural place called church, we need to be reminded that we do make the mark in God's eyes, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and that we are beloved. No matter our height, our weight, our income, our skin tone, our sexuality or gender, or all those other things that the world wants us to believe make us not quite up to par. But this is super good news, and it's not just for us. It's good news for everyone. Everyone. And if we know that, if we remember that, then much of our ancient text that sounds so far away and removed from our experience take on a fresh meaning for our lives. I'm sure that it's obvious that I'm in favor of women's equality. I'm actually in favor of everyone's equality. I believe that all people are equal, period. At the same time, though, I am never, ever offended in any way when someone, usually a male, opens the door or pulls out a chair for me. Quite the opposite. I'm actually a bit humbled by these small acts of chivalry. But I don't think it should just be men opening doors or pulling out chairs for women. We should all be doing that for each other. We should honor each other in such small acts and in bigger acts as well. In the letter to the Hebrews, we are reminded that we should show hospitality to strangers because we could be entertaining angels without knowing it. I think we could safely go far enough to say that we will be entertaining heavenly beings, even if they act like absolute devils. If we know without a shadow of a doubt that we are created in the image of God, in the likeness of God, how much more will we be able to follow the author's directive that we be content with what we have? Would our lives look different if we were content with what we have? Would our lives look different if we were content with who we are? Remember that you are beloved and be content. Not one of us is more beloved or less beloved. We are all incredibly beloved, beloved by all, beyond all measure. Us! This ragtag group of folks who love nothing more than to beat ourselves up over a few pounds on the scales or a few crooked teeth or some wrinkles or not having achieved everything we thought we should have achieved by this point in our lives. We are beloved, just as we are. Let that settle into your bones and look around. And know that everyone else here is just that beloved as well. Jesus is at the home of a leader of the Pharisees for dinner, which shows us that Jesus is not totally down on the Pharisees. If he were, he would have refused the invitation. The other guests begin to arrive, and they begin to take their seats in places that they believe will adequately reflect their station in life, that will show what honored guests they are. Eating together is important. Sharing meals is important. Being an honored guest is not important, ever. Remember that in the culture that Jesus was sharing this parable, being honored is the most important thing, the very most important thing. So Jesus, being Jesus, turns this most important thing upside down. Do not seek honor in the eyes of those at the table with you, he says. Sit at a seat with no distinction. Maybe the host will invite you to move up. Maybe that won't happen at all. But if you are content, if you are free of that devilish human pride sin and are content in the knowledge that you are beloved beyond belief, then probably the things that worry you or stress you out, like the place where you're supposed to sit, will no longer matter. When we remember to whom we belong and who loves us best, then the day-to-day stressors seem so much less worth our time and energy to worry about. Let me warn you, lest that you think this sermon is worthy of Bobby McFerrin's song, Don't Worry, Be Happy. Just because we are in the loving arms of God and remembered that we are precious and wonderfully made in the image of God does not mean that we will not endure hardships. We will. We do. And that will not stop, even when we can wrap our minds around our belovedness. But when we remember that we are all beloved by God, we know that even in the times of deep pain and even heartbreak, we are not alone, and we are still beloved, all of us. Look around you and see the beloved of God. Look in the mirror and see the beloved of God. And treat each other and yourselves that way.